Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road. I have a whole fresh slate of dates. We're going to be double crab caking because it's the holidays and I want to eat well, and crab cakes and eggnog work for me. We're going to be at Coco's. We're going to be at Pappas. We're going to be down at Fadley's. We're going to be taking the show up back down to Annapolis with Governor Wes Moore. All of it presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We'll be giving away Raven scratch-offs as well as our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. 5 years, 0% financing with our friends at Window Nation these days, especially as the winter weather gets here. It's nice to have new windows in my joint as well. And our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare sponsoring the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We got the governor, the mayor, all sorts of things. I have a really big guest this week. I don't even want to jinx it. It's like number one on my bucket list. And I've had some great authors come on too, but the holidays coming. Basketball season now, hockey season now. And obviously the Ravens in the middle of this run that they're making, and Luke's out, Owings Mills doing all that this week for the game. But I got a book on my desk, and my wife loves when the books come here and they're real thick and they're real, man, must be a lot going on in that book. This guy writes big, fat books and biographies and sort of definitive pieces. A writer's writer, as we'd say, and I'm a guy that's written a couple of books, and I know the madness that goes into this. This one is Magic. The life of Irvin Magic Johnson. Maybe there's a commander story somewhere in there now that there's a connection there. Maybe we can raid their pass rush before it's all over with. Roland Lazenby is an author, a writer of writings, and has put this thing together here after. It feels like it would take me a lifetime of research to do one of these on Ray Lewis or on Cal Ripken or on one of our legends here. But you come at this honest because, I mean, you take on a subject and you take a deeper dive. There have been plenty of books written about Magic, but lots of folks can be reaching for this one. It's a pleasure to have you on, Roland. How are you?
I'm doing great, Nestor. Thank you for having me on.
Well, when somebody puts together one of these type of things, and it's got this sort of binding and this sort of thickness to it, and about a subject that, look, man, I remember my dad and I, 1979, you know, Michigan State, Larry Bird, all that. I fell in love with March Madness. I was 11 years old. It was a bad October for the Orioles that year, but a really good spring for college basketball and a springboard. I mean, I feel like Magic, everything that Magic did happened in the limelight and showtime. And I mean, I think it was one of those seminal moments. Like, you remember where you were when Magic Johnson was diagnosed with HIV and we were all concerned for his health, his life, the press conference, all of that. Boy, it was 30 years ago. And you go and find the things he's done off the court since he stopped dribbling, there's a whole book in that, right?
Oh, there is. I mean, Forbes just revealed today he's now a billionaire. And of course, that's very important to Magic because he's trying mightily to keep up with Michael Jordan. And, you know, Michael's clocking in at about $3 billion. But Magic, with the way he's acquiring businesses and properties and with how intense he is, you just never know. He may get there.
Well, in putting this together, I mean, I guess there's so many parts you could focus on in a book like this. I guess anyone that's accomplished in the way he's accomplished, not just financially, but been a public figure well beyond the basketball court, even when he was a celebrity beyond the basketball side of things before the rap people took over and all wanted to be basketball players and was back and forth. You know, Magic had the smile. Magic had the point guard and the weirdness of his game of being so big and playing a position that was made more for Muggsy Bogues, right? Where do you start to take on Magic, and how many other books have been written about him? I'm just guessing there's got to be dozens, and I'm sure you poured through some of that to say we want to take on new territory with Magic's story.
Well, you know, when I wrote Michael Jordan, The Life, it came out from Little Brown in 2014, it's in 21 languages now, just came out in Portuguese. But when I started that, there were 27 other books named Michael Jordan. But, you know, biography is all about context. And these are amazing, when you think about it, these are amazing stories, American stories. And when Magic was headed out to LA in 1979 as a 19-year-old, the NBA had just seen a 25% drop in its regular season broadcast ratings. Nobody had managed in the 30 or so years that American basketball had operated, nobody had really managed to create anything that the general public cared about with the NBA. It was really tough. The NBA had to stage games for a lot of its existence, particularly its early existence, with the Harlem Globetrotters, doubleheaders, just so it could sell tickets. And yet here comes this sort of, I mean, it's this otherworldly force of nature. Here's Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, one white, one black, coming out of the 70s. But Magic Johnson has been this kid that has just dominated the agenda from the time he was in junior high on every team he ever played on. As his teammates told me, I couldn't play the way I wanted to play. I had to play the way Magic wanted me to play, or I wasn't going to get to play. And the coaches were faced with that too. And so here's this force of nature. LA is in tough shape. They have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but they've gotten rid of a lot of talent. But Magic gets to LA as a 19-year-old kid, and the first time in his life, here's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Nobody messes with him. As Ron Carter told me, Kareem says jump, you say how high. And Magic suddenly stopped in his tracks and realized he had to change what he did. He had to get along with the great Kareem. And he did. It's just part of how he began to conquer the world.
Well, I think seeing the lens of the NBA in the 70s. So, you know, I was born in 68. Aparicio is my last name. So I was born into a baseball family in Baltimore. But my father loved the NBA. My father grew up in Scranton, Pennsylvania, loved the NBA. And my father went to all of those Bullets, Knicks games, Willis Reed, all that period of time, and Wes Unseld. And my father was so pissed at Abe Pollin. My father hated Abe Pollin for moving the Baltimore Bullets to the Capitol Bullets and the Washington Bullets. And so I come at this differently in 75, 6, 7, 8. I'm watching Greavy and I'm watching the Big E and I'm watching Wes and I'm watching Barry and I'm watching the Seattle Supersonics and watching the Golden State Warriors and watching a really good Bullets team on Channel 20 through the snow. There's no cable television. They weren't on in Baltimore. Baltimore might as well have been 1,000 miles from the Capitol Center. I never got to go to a Bullets game as a kid when Kareem came in as a Buck and then as a Laker after that in the late 70s. So for me, this the notion all these years later, I'm watching The White Shadow, staying up late, watching that on CBS. So, I mean, I loved basketball. I loved Dr. J, who I ran into in Vegas last week in a casino. It was just like I had a moment with Dr. J, and I've interviewed him and whatnot. But, like, I didn't want to bother him. I'm like, because he was my guy. Dr. J was my player. So, you know, ABA, I collected ABA cards, 75, 6, 7, all of that. So to me, the NBA was a very was a part of my thing because of my dad. But I look back and see tape delay broadcast and championship games that weren't on live and like thinking about how mature football was from the Brent Musburger and Jane Kennedy and Sunday to how national that was to CBS running tape delay games. And then Magic and Larry Bird literally changing everything in time for Kareem and Dr. J and some of those players to still drink from it in the early 80s, but building something that the league has never looked back. And I think to myself, if Magic played for the Trailblazers and Larry Bird had played for the, I don't know, name one of the Utah Jazz, or maybe it was New Orleans Jazz then, but it might have been different. But I mean, the placement of these players, it's the butterfly that really changed the league for every Jordan and LeBron that came after them.
As I'm hearing this, I'm thinking, you know, I wonder how many folks in Baltimore know that Baltimore was the Bullets, was a huge part of the early NBA. They played at Uline Arena. They played at the old, they would play in hotels, and they played at the old Broadwood Hotel at Robert Jake Embry. I interviewed him. He was the Baltimore owner. They would slide on that floor in the hotel and make plays. This was in the late 40s and whatnot. But Baltimore has that NBA blood coursing through its veins.
Charlie Ekman, one-time head coach of the Charlie Southern
was
Pistons.
So great. He was so great. I interviewed him, and you know, he went on to the Pistons. He was the one official in league history who went from being an official to a coach. He went and coached the Fort Wayne Pistons. And Charlie was such a treat to interview. And so it's so great to hear you talk about
it. Well, many people here compare me and my career to him, and he and I crossed paths in the 80s and 90s. He's a wonderful guy, and there's a road named after him down in Glen Burnie, Charlie Ekman Drive. It leads to a playground, and you talk about Baltimore and the NBA and Muggsy and everything that went on here with the Dunbar guys, you know, through it. Muggsy was on recently.
Reggie Ross, Lewis broke Wingate, my heart. Reggie, great guy.
Oh, I mean, so Baltimore has been a part of all of this. So the Magic is now invested in here and in D.C. and in these urban communities. What has made him tick? I mean, the basketball side, I saw at Showtime, the leadership, Pat Riley, like all of that. I am fascinated by the entrepreneurship and by, you know, the dumb jock part of, look, you play, you dribble, you make your money, you're a spokesperson, you do TV, but the modern era of what Jordan has become, and I think what some other athletes, I think of Ali or people of that era that had money and wealth, but ownership of things that work. We hear the failed restaurants, the failed bars, the failed business, you know, they're getting ripped off, like all of that. Magic has, over the last 30, 35 years, especially after the HIV part, not only lived a healthy life, which we were all concerned about years ago, but has taken that next step to entrepreneurship that a lot of athletes dream about and talk about and quite frankly fail at.
Yeah, you know, Magic, with him, it's all organic. This is stuff he wanted to do as a kid. First of all, his old man was an auto worker in Lansing, Michigan. And the old man had a trash hauling business on the side. Magic and his brothers had to work on it. But Magic cleaned the offices. There are two black businessmen who were very successful in Lansing. Magic idolized both of them. The other organic part of it is he sat in the theaters on Saturday mornings in Lansing, and he just absolutely loved movie houses. And so all of this is very organic. But, you know, his first big money, now that he's a billionaire, we can look back and see that his first big money came out of the Dream Team. Suddenly, and this is not a story known to most Americans, but suddenly after the Dream Team, there was this tremendous demand globally for American basketball. And here he comes with the Magic Johnson All-Stars. And he is traveling all over the place, putting his guys in Lear jets. He's playing on every continent, maybe even Antarctica. But, I mean, they're everywhere.
And you know what? That spawned Muggsy doing that here, right? And right. Other people going to their hometown and putting on a celebrity. I'll come to your game, you come to my game. There was so much of that going on here. Even in Baltimore, when we didn't have a team, we had a game every year, and I don't know if Magic came once or twice, but it was like that. When right. Muggsy put it on, guys came in and they sold 12,000 tickets here for the fuel fund.
Right, and these were not celebrity fundraisers. This was a traveling basketball team playing teams all over Europe and Asia, and Magic was making 21st century money off of this. And he came out of the gate once his HIV diagnosis and the controversy over that had denied him basketball. People around the globe had no trouble with it. And he was making a lot of money. But his ambitions were much larger than that. You know, Jerry Buss had spent a lot of time really teaching him how to read the bones of a business. But I interviewed Peter Guber, who owns Mandalay, the film company. In the early 90s, Peter, of course, owns a chunk of the Warriors, a chunk of the Dodgers. And in the early 90s, he was president of Sony USA, and Magic calls him up and says, I want to take a business meeting with you. And here comes Magic with his financial manager, these two black guys, to meet Peter Guber. And they tell him, they know, and Sony USA is building theaters at the time. And they say, we got a situation for you of underserved communities. And it came in, and it was, their idea was, here are the numbers. Here are the black communities that need a theater. And boom, Guber turned around to his Sony people and said, let's look at these numbers. And they bought it. They bought the whole thing. Suddenly, those Magic Johnson theaters are all over the place still today. Magic long divested them and moved on, but he and Guber became partners in everything. In fact, when Guber went to the Warriors and they were looking for a managing basketball mind, who did they want? They wanted Magic Johnson. They didn't want Jerry West. And they asked Magic to come be the own piece of the Warriors and to manage all of that franchise. Magic said, I can't do it. It was stunned. It stunned Peter Guber. He said, I can't do it. Now, Guber and Magic owned the Dayton Dragons. They later went and bought all these different minor league sports and had a blast doing it, but offered the Warriors, who wouldn't jump at that? When Magic turned it down, they went and hired Jerry West to do it. And of course, that was all an important factor in building that Warrior success in this century. But Magic has just been a nut. He owns contracting companies. He owns food service companies. He is doing every insurance companies, the list of stuff. I said, you know, a cynic would say he has as many business partners as he had sexual partners back in the day. And that's by his own account. It is just absolutely crazy what he has done as a businessman.
Roland Lazenby is here. He writes biographies of great American athletes, primarily, has written in some other spaces as well. So, you know, we'll get back to Magic in a minute, but just tying this all together, what makes, I mean, I've been crazy. I've written 4 books, and every time I write them, it's very Jack Torrance. It's like I should go out to the Shining Hotel and just type away and only, you know, send me food and drinks under the door. And I've written them on championships. When the Ravens won a championship, I got inspired. I'm like, I'm going to dedicate the next 100 days of my life to getting a book together. And John Eisenberg laughs at me. All my author friends are like, we take 4 or 5 years to put together a book. I'm like, you weren't trying to get it sold by Father's Day after a championship in the heat of the moment. I'm a journalist by trade and a sports writer by trade. So writing's always 12 inches, 18 inches a column. I tend to be curiously long in general, as apparently so do you in these biographies. But what is the seed that makes you say, this is my next one, this is the focus? And then to, much like all of my author buddies, dive in to find a manuscript that is, I haven't checked this out, but we're at about 800 pages here, Roland.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've done plenty of those championship stories. That's one of the things I was doing in the, you know, Georgetown. John Thompson hired me to do his championship book in 1984, which was a big break. I also, at the same time, did a deal with the late Billy Packer. We ended up doing 5 books together. But, you know, I had started working with the Celtics in the 80s. Billy and I did a history of the Final Four that sold a lot of copies for a publisher. And so I moved into the NBA. I wanted to do that. But I have to tell you, the Chicago Tribune book division, back then there were a lot of these regional book divisions that were investing in championship projects and things like that. And Chicago Tribune Book Division hired me. I was at the All-Star Game in 92 in Orlando when Magic came back from HIV. I was there when they hired me to write a history of the Bulls. Once I got into Chicago and started doing all of that, the Bulls projects and the freelancing just sort of came at me like a batting cage. You know, it was like, hit this one, quick, hit that one. And It was rapid fire, but the main thing, as you know, it's all relationships. I met the late, great Tex Winter. He became a dear friend. I really spent a lot of time with those Bulls. And I wrote a book on the Last Dance season that the director for The Last Dance, Doc, said was his Bible. It was called Blood on the Horns. But I went on from there. That basis, I worked with the early Lakers with Magic and Showtime, but then I really spent a lot of time with Kobe. And so I did these books where I was on location, much like you working with the Ravens, where you're there around a team, you get to know people, you get to observe things. And I just had a big segue in my life where I moved into full-length biography because I wanted the context, the deep background on the families, what makes these people all these great competitors. And we all know the racial history of America. It is absolutely horrific. The character assassination of the black male has been, it's almost like the buffalo, the assassination of the greatest part of this country in a lot of ways. And yet, here we have a day now where the global heroes, my Kobe books in 12 languages, Jordan's in 21, Magic's already licensed in 7. People all over the globe want to figure out American society because our race is very complex. And the rise of these great competitors as cultural figures is a big part of that. I just sort of happened to catch that wave.
And also succeeding off the court, off the field, away from the limelight in other ways than just how many championships you won or how many all-star games you went to or how many trophies are in the closet. That's something for me. I'm in my 32nd year of doing radio here. We moved to a brand called Baltimore Positive in recent years, not just because as sports writers or sports journalists were treated like garbage by modern athletes because they learned that from their Pop Warner coach, through their agents, through their, like, it's just a much different gig than it was 39 years ago when I was covering hockey or even covering Dr. J's last game against the Milwaukee Bucks up at the Spectrum in the late 80s. It's changed a lot, but the access to someone they would trust, it was Magic helpful or not helpful? I often have to ask that because I never really know when I see a book. And I think in most cases, a journalist would say, well, you know, I mean, maybe I knew him a little bit or whatever, but there is inherent, I don't want to say embarrassments or down parts of anyone's life that you're going to write a book this thick. It can't all, I mean, Magic went through HIV. I lived through that. That was, there was no bigger controversy there in the world, right?
I was there for all of that in LA, talking to him every day. I will tell you that for this book, first of all, Magic's the greatest control freak in the history of everything.
And they all are, right? Everyone you've ever written a book about. I mean, Tom Magic, Brady, Kobe Bryant, right?
Yeah, well, I was there. You know, I spent a lot of time with Kobe as a lost, lonely young man. He didn't have any control over anything when he was at the Lakers. But my point with Magic, from the time he was a junior high player, he was controlling the agenda. And he just got better and better at it. It started with his rebounding. He got the ball in his hand. He was throwing no-look passes in the sixth grade. But the point in all of this is he has this – And biography is different from autobiography. He has had his own word, his own effort at controlling his narrative. We all want to control our own narratives. Superstars, rock stars often get to do that. But with a biography, you have to say, look, I'm writing this book on you. You can trust me or not. And what happened is Magic thought about it and said, yeah, I'm going to work with you. Then a documentary deal came along and he said, no, I'm not. But Lon Rosen and all of his representatives and so many of the people in his life wanted to see this done. Lon Rosen, his longtime friend and agent, you know, the guy probably gave me 60 interviews for this book. And so things would go to Magic, but Magic, you don't become a billionaire because you got a lot of time on your hands. He really didn't have a lot of time to be involved. As I explain in the back part of the book, I said, look, I don't need your time. This is about what people observed of you. This has to be an independent record. And of course, there are so many positive things. You know, the negative stuff's there. I never shy away from that. But it's not like I'm there to dwell on negative moments. I mean, you don't have to say that he slept with 300 plus women a year more than once for people to get the picture. But I do explain all of that and the cost and trouble with that. But, you know, Magic is now getting all these reports. People are telling him he really needs to read the book. He'll love it. And suddenly I've got his interest. And so that's good if he does or he doesn't. You know, Michael got very angry with me, Michael Jordan, and Michael had been great to me in my years in Chicago. And I, you know, I always send the book to people, let them look at it ahead of time. When I did one on Phil Jackson, came out in 2000, an LA Times bestseller. And I sent it to him 4 months ahead of time. And
under the guise that he could change, like say, hey, that it didn't happen that way, Roland, I want you to get it right. Or under the guise of, hey, read it before the world sees it.
Under the guise that if there's something wrong, he's going to argue about it. And I'll include his point there. That good. Blowing the horns, I gave it to Jerry Reinsdorf and Jerry Krause. And that's when they unloaded on Phil and told me so many things. And Phil had been great to me, but he had lied. He had told major lies in some of the interviews. And Phil knew that. I sent him the manuscript. I never heard a word back from him. 20 years to the day later, in 1999, Phil sends me an email with some answers for some of the things in the biography. That's how crazy Phil is. But I always give people a chance to look at it and to see. And you know,
it's not journalism if you're not pissing them off to some degree, right? Like,
right. Well, they all get pissed off. But Michael shook my hand. He shook my hand after it came out. They treat me well down there. I tell these family stories, and they are powerful. With the data mining available today, I was able to track Magic's family back to the 1830s to North Carolina to his fourth great grandmother. And it opened up a world that just knocked me off my feet. And things that I just couldn't begin to imagine. And it really brought, I was already, you know, I'd written Michael Jordan, my book of Michael Jordan deals heavily with his great grandfather who was born on the coastal plain in 1891. And his story is powerful. And it's all about moonshining and sharecropping with Jerry West. I did the Jerry West bio for ESPN in 2009. Hell, Jerry West people came over here with Georgetown. With Jamestown, not Georgetown. Came over here. Lord De La War, Delaware. Thomas West, that's his lineage. But at one point along the way, Jerry West, great, 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 how many great grandfathers got kicked out of the family, and they ended up as dirt scratching hillbillies over in West Virginia. So each of these backstories, when you look at it, it's a, and Pete, the great Pete Newell, the great basketball coach and later GM of the Lakers, told me in 1991, that if I really wanted to understand Jerry West, I had to understand West Virginia. And these family stories are heartbreaking. Jerry and his, and these great competitors, just to summarize things, they're all incredible perfectionists. And they are all deeply influenced, often by their mothers, but also relationship with fathers. And Jerry and his mother were just these fierce, crazy, insane perfectionists. And they both loved dearly Jerry's older brother, David, who was killed in the Korean War. And Jerry, who was only 13, his mother, both had this horrible nervous breakdown over the death of David West, the brother. But my point in all of this is that each of these family stories has this very surprising but important American narrative that dovetails into everything they accomplish. And it reflects so many of things related to not just their character, but the family character of these great American people.
Roland Lazenby will be doing the deep dive on all things Magic, the life of Irvin Magic Johnson. The book is available, makes a perfect holiday gift. Basketball season just getting started. Always great to have authors on talking about the deep dives into this sort of thing. You mentioned all of this family history and trees. You don't know that when you dive into this, right? I mean, or did
Oh, no. No, it's shocking. As you get in and with the data mining, suddenly, boom. There's a first name. His grandmother has a first name, Farabee. There's not another first. I found one other Farabee in the whole record for North Carolina. The entire story. And I had to fight to get this in the book. But I think it's important that we have a sense of who we are. I mean, this is a great story for a Black American family. But it's really the story of American freedom, and it belongs to first those families, but it's important for all of us to cherish and appreciate. And I'm sorry, I don't want to get on a soapbox about it. It's just sort of how I operate. And you find amazing things. And of course, Magic Johnson. There's a reason he's been an amazing person. He's not perfect. And I don't dwell on his imperfections, but I make the point each and every way he did wrong things, and he's done his share. But the point in all of this is, it's like Jerry West said. Jerry West admitted to me in 1990 that he didn't think the Lakers should have drafted Magic number one overall because you couldn't tell how good he was going to be. You couldn't see it. And Jerry West told me something then. I was interviewing him in Dallas in his hotel room while he was scouting talent. And he said, you know, you can see what a player can do on the floor, but you can't read their hearts. And Billy Packer said the same thing. The Final Four crew from that great game, they didn't think Magic or Larry, either one, would ever have a hope in pro basketball. But what Jerry West said is, you can't see what's inside them. You can't read the size of their hearts. Dr. Jack Ramsey in Portland said, we didn't think Magic could ever be a point guard. We terrorized him because he didn't have a left hand when he came in the league as a rookie. The next year he had a left hand and he did it all himself. And so you cannot measure the size of the heart. And that is where Magic takes his place at the table. One of the biggest, if not the biggest heart in the history of a game of very big hearts.
Magic Johnson, more than just the owner of the Washington Commanders. They got to change those jerseys. Oh, my God. And you go back to Jack Kent Cook, right? I mean, like,
yes.
That's the Laker connection.
Jack sold the Lakers and got that hell out of L.A. after the big divorce and went and became Mr. Redskin.
Yeah, and we're all better for that, I guess. Roland Lazenby's here. The book is on Magic Johnson. So I got to add, all you crazy-ass authors, you got three projects. What's you doing LeBron? What are you doing next here?
I am working as a producer on a documentary about LeBron's early.
See, I knew it. I didn't even say it in the notes, but I knew he was next.
I'm doing a project on David Stern. And, you know, years ago, I thought the NBA needs an NBA Finals history. And the NBA loved the idea. They bought it. And I got to go around interviewing everybody. This was in 1989 and 90. I got to interview guys like Robert, Jake, Embry. I got to interview, all of the great early owners, Les Harrison and Rochester and all of these great characters who came in. You know, many of them were of the Jewish faith. And they had basketball was a Jewish game before it was an American game, really. But they, in the wake of the Holocaust and World War II, they were the Hockey Arena Owners Association. And they went in bigger for basketball to start the BAA, the Basketball Association of America, which segued into the NBA. And so this is a rich tapestry of a lot of different Americans. And it is a great story. The whole thing, the great players, the crazy owners and these insane competitors, the Larry Birds and Magic Johnsons that just captured, and Michael Jordan, who captured the attention of the global audience.
Well, maybe the NBA is going to get my attention back, because I have waned every year of my life. I've watched less NBA, cared less NBA. We have no future of getting a team here. The local team, the Wizards, are the bastardized version of our stolen team from my childhood. It's kind of weird. They're never any good. To run into Dr. J and to have this rambling, wonderful conversation with you about Magic, and maybe it's meant to be that I'm supposed to go old school and maybe go get myself a Barry jersey from 76.
You want to look for somebody to blame it on?
Go ahead. Who am I blaming it on?
Because basketball has done a total transformation. You think of all these great stars, Michael and Kobe and Magic and Larry, and they all came down the pipeline, and basketball was evolving, but it was this great sport. But there was a man very unsatisfied by all of this, a very powerful man named Jerry Colangelo. And, you know, they did a big hype book on 7 seconds or less, and he was in control of the competition committee. He was sick and tired of Phil Jackson and the triangle winning championships, and he came in and shaved the timeline. You know, it used to be 10 seconds to get the ball across at half court, shaved it to 8. Then they shaved the reset clock to 14 from 24. And what he did, he sped up the game with the idea that Phoenix could probably finally win a championship. But, you know, and Mike D'Antoni, a wonderful man from West Virginia, but a brilliant offensive coach, but a guy who should never be allowed near a defense. And what happened is they never won. But Mike D'Antoni transformed the game of basketball into what you see today, with everybody jacking up all these ugly threes. Now, don't get me wrong, Steve Kerr, Golden State Warriors, that's a thing of beauty. They could play in any league at any time, but it has unleashed a curse of ugliness on New Age basketball. Nobody watches complete games. They're all stats freaks. And that's what the old owners knew. That's what Eddie Gottlieb in Philadelphia knew. He had Jumpin' Joe Fulks, a Kentucky hillbilly, who became the first 20 points per game scorer. He played him a lot of minutes. What did he do with Wilt? He played Wilt every minute of the season except 4, because fans love high scoring. And so that's what Colangelo was doing. It's not like a crime he committed, but he wanted to speed things up. And they're making so much money from the sped up game. I'm not sure who's paying all this money, but they're making so much money, I'm not sure they'll ever go back.
Well, Colangelo, Reinsdorf, all these names of yesteryear that affected baseball and basketball as well out of Chicago. Roland Lazenby's written a book on Magic Johnson. He writes lots of books. My gosh, Kobe Bryant, Tom Brady, we can go through back. Johnny U, how did I not even mention Johnny U? How did I take 28 minutes and not mention Johnny U to you, huh?
That's a 64-page book, you know, sort of a juvenile. I've written a lot of different books. That's sort of a juvenile picture book that really was a testament to the great Johnny U.
Well, we love Johnny U around here. You're in Baltimore, my friend. Hey, if you ever make it this way, we got a crab cake in your honor. I'm never going to let you have a tourist crab cake coming up here from Salem, Virginia. You probably get a decent crab cake down there, though, from time to time, right?
No.
Nah. Okay, well, good. Get up here then. We'll get you a decent crab cake. Roland Lazenby, the great author, sports writer, educator as well. A pleasure for all that you do. Please come back and bend my ear with your next book and tell me some old stories. I mean, I wish you had written a wooden book, because I had a million questions about wooden. But
Billy and I did that history of the Final Four. We did a lot with Coach Wooden for that book. But, you know, there are Seth Davis did a great wooden book.
That book was fantastic. I had Seth on the show too. John Wooden's special to me because we were born on the same day. We share October 14th as a birthday. My father loved John Wooden, you know. And so,
son of Indiana.
I had John Wooden on my show on our birthday back in 1999 out of Chicago when I was syndicated at Sporting News Radio, 101 Sports, and I don't have the tape. Oh. It's the holy grail of missing tapes that the John Wooden chat does not exist in my archive. So I'm a little, hey, you know, but it happened. I know it happened. Roland, thank you very, very much. You've been very generous with your time. Please come back again. Talk some more basketball with us, pal. All right.
I'm happy to do it, Nestor. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you for being such an engaging host with great questions.
Well, really, I try. Over 32 years, I try to ask.
Oh, yeah, you try.
I tried hard in this one. Roland Lacy here. We'll get him up here for a crab cake. It's all presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation, as well as Jiffy Lube Multi-Care. Luke's out in Owings Mills getting you ready for Ravens football here this week. We're getting ready for the holidays and crab cakes and pumpkin pie and all the good cheer that comes. Crab cakes and turkey. Maybe that's a new thing. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Little Magic Johnson and some Baltimore positives. Stay with us.